Later this hour, awkwardness as a sign of social change, positive social change for people who have lived on the fringe since at least the middle of the last century, transgender people, people who have lived as men and women and with developments in medicine are able to change genders completely. There are an estimated 700,000 transgender people in the United States, and they are becoming a much more visible group in entertainment, in politics, in civic life. The transgender views of everything from tolerance to national security, if you include convicted leaker Chelsea Manning, to parenting are increasingly a part of the national conversation. It's an emergence for transgender people that has come with some icky moments, though.
My question is simply this. Do you dispute that you were born a boy?
Do I dispute that I was born a boy? I was born a baby who was assigned male at birth. I did not identify or live my life as a boy. As soon as I had enough agency in my life to grow up, I became who I am.
That's Piers Morgan on CNN getting the business from transgender activist Janet Mock. And we can mock Morgan, but these moments are also signals of something. I remember when I was a little kid in the early 1960s, we adopted a young African-American boy for the summer in our very white suburb. Jimmy Nelson was the first black person I had ever seen. And when he showed up while we were playing, I asked him if he was black under his shirt and his socks, too. I'm appalled when I think of it. Jimmy just laughed and pulled up his shirt. I'm sure he forgot the question. I didn't. These kinds of awkward moments of disjointed knowledge and well-intended curiosity are part of the narrative of race in America. Listen.
I mean, you got the first sort of mainstream African-American who was articulate and bright and clean and a nice-looking guy.
Jay Gibbs wanted to get this kid, and that little monkey gets loose, doesn't he?
The late Howard Cosell and Joe Biden making points that made sense to them at the time, I suppose, but once the words are out of their mouths, awkward. When I became disabled at 19, I had to get used to people staring at my wheelchair. My four-year-old's school friends love to ask me why I can't walk, and they ask it over and over again, even today. Years ago, an adult wondered on a trip to the beach why my legs weren't all shriveled up like he thought they should be. And once, a well-intentioned mom asked me why I didn't cut my legs off since they were paralyzed, and how many times I wanted to kill myself because I was in a wheelchair. Awkward. Later in the hour, how those awkward moments apply to transgender individuals. We'll hear from Thomas Page McBee, managing editor of the Policy Mike website, and Jennifer Boylan, professor of English at Colby College, who say, beyond the naive questions, they are seeing a much more educated and sensitive conversation.
I think increasingly it's young people who can get their mind around it and who can get their mind around the larger issue of identity and the search for self. So I think to some degree, it's also young people are growing up in a different era. They're growing up in an era where there are more stories that are public. There are more trans people in the public eye. But it's kind of a hard call to make who's going to get it and who's not going to get it. I mean, my mother, who was in her 90s and who was a very serious evangelical Christian, got it instantly. She said, love will prevail and that I would never turn my back on my child. And some other people, including gay and lesbian allies, weren't necessarily as quick on the draw as my conservative mother.
So tolerance comes from unexpected quarters in this kind of narrative. The media doesn't necessarily do terribly well. We referred to some issues with Piers Morgan on CNN. Katie Couric had a famous encounter with the actress Laverne Cox, who's been on this program. What do you make of the media's track record here, Thomas?
I mean, I think that's a lot of what the story I wrote for Policy Mike was about how mainstream media has really struggled to try to tell these stories in the ways that make sense to trans people. And I think, again, this goes back to, you know, what Jennifer's referring to about young people. I agree that more and more young people are allied with the trans movement in large part because they've seen our stories. They know us. We're visible. Our narratives are, you know, in their lives every day because of social media and because of new media versus, I think, you know, if you're getting only one story from more mainstream or legacy media outlets, I think that approach has always been about interrogating trans folks or, you know, otherwise trying to understand us in a way that assumes there's something very different about us. So again, back to that main point, I think that the more that trans people are treated just as people with stories that are the same as any other people with stories, the less you see that kind of questioning.
Tell us about your own experience where someone else has tried to figure you out or define you by their initial impressions of you, maybe an awkward question you were asked or asked yourself. Tell us about it at 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can reach us at facebook.com/thetakeaway. We will end this hour with an awkward moment that just might signal a new day dawning for transgender people in America and the world. First, the awkward moment, courtesy of Katie Couric.
Yeah, I'm curious because, you know, I think all of us want to be educated, and Carmen was sort of recoil a little bit when I asked her about her transition, and she said that people who are not educated about this or are familiar with sort of transgenders, they're preoccupied with the genitalia question.
She's asking that question to transgender actress Laverne Cox from the Netflix series Orange is the New Black, who pulls no punches in her answer.
The preoccupation with transition and with surgery objectifies trans people, and then we don't get to really deal with the real lived experiences. The reality of trans people's lives is that so often we're targets of violence. We experience discrimination disproportionately to the rest of the community. Our unemployment rate is twice the national average. If you're a trans person of color, it's four times the national average. The homicide rate in the LGBT community is highest amongst trans women. And when we focus on transition, we don't actually get to talk about those things.
The profile for transgender people has been raised by these moments and others. With curiosity and profile come moments of learning and education. And that excites transgender journalist Thomas Page McBee, managing editor of the Policy Mike website, and Jennifer Boylan, professor of English at Colby College.
It feels to me as if we are actually at a tipping point. For decades now, I think trans people have been defined by others. And we've often been defined by people who want to exploit us or who see us as some sort of experimental version of the human being. Now I think we are beginning to control the discourse for ourselves and get a chance to tell our own stories, which is a nice change.
Thomas, would you agree?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think a lot of that has to do with social and new media and the way that that surfaced a lot of different kinds of stories and narratives. So we're not just seeing the same story over and over again. That's kind of a translated version of our experience. We're hearing from trans people telling our own stories, and that's really showing a real diversity of narratives, which is really exciting.
The most famous, probably original transgender was Christine Jorgensen in the United States. And I was looking back at the original headlines in 1951 to talk about what she was dealing with. And, you know, sure enough, in 1951, you know, what does she get asked about? Surgery, right? And here's her response in 1951 to a question about her surgery and her operation and what that entailed. As you can see by the enclosed photos, Christine says, taken just before the operation, I have changed a great deal, but it is the other changes that are so much more important. Remember the shy, miserable person who left America, referring to her previous identity? Well, that person is no more. And as you can see, I'm in marvelous spirits. In some ways, Jennifer, that really sums up the story that has emerged in the more than half century since 1951.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? One effect of the marriage equality movement has been a change in the way we speak about gay men and lesbians in this country. We've moved from a discussion of gay sex in terms of how straight people think of gay people to a conversation about love. The narrative is now, who is for love and who's against love? And of course, everyone's for love, right? So in terms of talking about gay men and lesbians, now the narrative has become much more humanized, I think. For transgender people, there's to some degree, or there has been a way in which the conversation has been about surgery and endocrinologists and transitions. And what we are approaching, I hope, is a time where that's not the conversation, where when we talk about trans people, we're talking about freedom of identity, freedom of self, and that we're slowly, at least I hope, moving away from pictures of before and after and discussion of the medical profession. And that means that trans people, I hope, are being seen as more familiar and more human.
You know, this narrative is familiar to me as someone in a wheelchair with a spinal cord injury, where, you know, initially people encountered me and think of me in a medical way. Oh, there's something wrong with you. What happened to you, kind of thing? And it takes a while, and often after some awkward, ignorant questions, to get to the point where people understand that, you know, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm not sick. I do get around in a different way. How in your life, Thomas, have awkward questions, ignorant questions been opportunities and a part of the process of getting the narrative away from these primitive stories that Jennifer describes?
I really appreciate you saying that, because I feel like I have the same sorts of experiences a lot. And I think one really strange thing for me about being trans is other people's need to understand my psychological process around my own body. I don't really need to understand other people's psychological processes. I just sort of accept at face value that, you know, your body is your body and your relationship to your body is your relationship to your body. So I think, you know, when it comes to interacting with people around specific questions around my body, I usually just talk about myself as an individual person with an individual body, having an individual experience, and usually turn the question around to them to be, you know, to sort of ask them how they feel about their bodies. And that usually does the trick pretty quickly.
The question is, how do we learn about anything new? And yes, I'm speaking as a college professor. It's important that people come from a position of knowledge. But in some ways, the most important thing is love. If you open your heart to the new and to people who are different from yourself, it's amazing what kind of knowledge will pour right in. And you may not need to know absolutely everything about someone's private life in order to be able to treat them with compassion and respect.
It's interesting, Jennifer, that you say that, because I actually often say to other people that I come from a place of love when I'm interacting with everybody. And I wonder how many trans people, because of our unique experience and having to navigate the world this way, you know, have this opportunity to approach people from this perspective and to put ourselves out here in this way. And in my experience, I've done that consistently, and I've had such a positive reaction.
Well, we're also at this wonderful point in the culture, because things really are changing, that we have Laverne Cox, a trans woman in a popular viral television show. We have Janet Mock, who is on television and speaking on our behalf. You have more and more trans people as part of the LGBT movement. And so culturally, we're at a moment where the world looks really different. I mean, when my first book, She's Not There, came out 12 years ago, I felt like I was, you know, stepping out onto very thin ice. Now I feel like the world has changed. It's changed even from 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a better place.
But you can still have bad days feeling like you're the other, and you're never going to get out of that box, right?
Oh, there can be bad days, but I absolutely believe that there will be days when, there's a Paul Simon song, I believe in the future we will suffer no more. Maybe not in my lifetime, but in yours, I feel sure.
Thomas Page McBee and Jennifer Boylan, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thomas Page McBee is managing editor of Policy Mike, the website, and Jennifer Boylan is professor of English at Colby College.
I believe. We shall suffer.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.